Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hey guys, welcome to the Summer of Scam Movies. I just want to give a quick little preface to this episode. It was so much fun. I laughed so hard. We had the best time, except doing all of that, living my best life, my audio didn't record, and we had to use the Zoom audio. So it is slightly tinny, and if you are put off by that, I want to apologize. It won't happen again. This isn't usually how we do things. Sure, a mistake goes wrong every time I record, you know, of course. But for right now, I want to apologize for all the tinniness because it's not typically how I want to give our episodes out, but it was such a fun episode. I have to share it. And I love Sarah Grace. She's incredible. Thanks.
Caitlin Bradnick.
And I'm Sarah Grace Walborn.
And we love scams.
Yes, scams, girl.
Hi, guys. We love scams. We love you. Welcome to Scam Wow. Oh, we are so happy to be here.
So happy to be here talking about scams.
Thank God. I'm so excited. So, Sarah, this is so funny. Like, during COVID, I miss all my friends. I miss seeing you guys at, like, in between auditions. So we're like, that director was a dick, right? Okay, yeah, your turn.
Oh, my God. Or just, like, the constant conversation of, like, you want me to wait for you so we can leave at the same time? So we can walk through, like, Madison Square Park and go.
Yes, I miss that.
I never did any good audition. I know.
Did you do the one?
I couldn't do it. I had to no. Was it good or bad?
No, it wasn't. It was not good. And the guy... I did it and I went in with some people that weren't UCB comedians and our styles were just different. It was more like theater, like musical theater style.
Yeah.
So they went in and they were very excitable and they said focus on improv. So I was trying to be the best improviser, not necessarily, guys, when you do an audition, there's so much in your head. There's so many things on the table and they tell you like a bunch of UCB people went in before me and they're like, we want you to do, it's all improvised. They off the book. So they want you to write the joke for them. Mm-hmm. So we go in and the people were really big and then he stops us and he goes, guys, you need to like tone it way back. We have a camera and we have a mic. So don't worry. We can hear and see you. It was such a rude blow.
There's no way you can like disassociate yourself from the rest of them. I mean, you want to in that moment be like, I wasn't doing that. But you can't.
Yes.
Because you're just in the group. Yeah.
Yes. And I was like, okay. And then we started and I tried to do things much more subtle. And then every time I went to speak, the musical theater guy spoke over me.
Yeah.
So I didn't even get any line out. And then he's like, okay, thanks guys. And I was like, wow, that is over. Like that was like it.
And
I
And then you probably waited in a virtual waiting room for like 35 minutes for it.
No, this was my first in-person one.
It was in person.
Yes, I did. So I did virtual for this and I did it with Erica Hernandez, who's a friend of mine.
Oh my God.
It was the best.
So that was
we
incredible.
Had the best time.
Yeah.
I was able to be subtle and like easy.
I mean, I feel like I decided in like maybe like 2016 or 17.
Tell me.
Yeah. This was just what I decided. If you don't get pulled in with the right group or the right partner and it's not an instant gel. I mean, essentially, if you don't get pulled in with someone, you already know.
Right, right.
They are so unimaginative. They can't imagine you out of the context of the other people or the partner.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just I didn't book it. Like, if they didn't put me in there, I see the waiting room and I'm like, if they didn't put me in there with Caitlin, I won't book it. They can't you without the other person. That's why you always show up to a job and you're like, oh, yeah, they booked me with the person I ride with.
Yeah. That is true. And I was also like, it's so funny. So I forgot to sign up. Like, I got dressed first and then I didn't realize, like, I didn't sign up on the list. And I go to sign up and I realize, like, shit, I could have gone with Becky Chacoin and Achilles.
No.
But I messed up because I was like, because the thing I also forgot about auditioning in person is that you sweat like crazy. The amount of sweat I had from just leaving my house to the place, I am like, I didn't even put on Spanx yet. Like, I am just in a full body sweat. And then then I get there and I dried myself off. Okay, I even brought a towel this time. I was like, I'm going to bring a sweat towel. This is disgusting. The sweat towel was a dark color. So then it was all over my neck. Like, I had like towel fibers on my neck. And then I'm in the bathroom changing and someone bangs on the door to enter. And I'm like, I'm still changing. And there's a sign that says, please don't get ready in here for the audition. But you have to. Where are you going to get ready?
What are you going to do?
On this curb? Yeah. So I did it. And I'm there. And really the most fun was just sitting with Becky and chatting about life.
I know. And you just have to love that part because there's just too many things that can go wrong. And then you'll spend the whole day going, if I was a little quicker in the bathroom, I could have auditioned with Becky and Achilles.
That is.
Yeah.
That is. Also, have you ever done this? I never done it. I don't think anybody would. But I wanted to like stop when we all left the room, turn to the casting director and say, I think I know what he wanted. I didn't do it correctly. Can I go in one more time? I've never done that.
You know, I once felt really brave. And as a caveat, I did not book this. But
but that's great.
I once felt really brave. And like, you know, they give you a note in the room and then you redo it. And then you're like, none of that landed. And then like 2 seconds later, I was like, oh, he meant like, he said, throw the lines away. And I thought he meant like, read it like deadpan. And I was doing like an Aubrey Plaza, like impersonation from like Parks and Rec. But I was like, no, he just meant like, none of it's important. Like just move through it more naturally without like telling us what the jokes are. And I was like, oh, can I just do it one more time? I just realized what you meant by throw it away.
That's great.
Yeah. So I felt really proud of myself. But then when I was done, he was like, you didn't need to do that though. He's like,
it was the same to me all along.
Like, you know, but he actually gave me the advice that he was like, it made you seem less confident. And I feel like we're just trying to book confidence.
Wait, if we ask him to go again?
Yeah. Or it could have just been the way I dealt it. I mean, maybe I was sweating profusely. I'm like, I just need one more
show. That's a guarantee. Wait, that's really, I haven't heard that he says to you, we're just booking confidence that you like know the role.
Like he was kind of giving me the impression that the best thing we could do is like kick down the door like Fonzie and be like, what's up everybody? Hey baby.
People like we literally hate. Like people that are like pure assholes.
Yeah.
Or, and that's what they want.
Yeah. I feel like that's what this guy wants. So.
Wow. That's fascinating.
I know.
So when someone is like, are you an improviser? It's not, are you a funny stand-up? Can you make lines up on the spot? Which is, I think, what they're asking. Oh. Do you have funny lines prepared?
Of course.
Even written?
Of course.
But when we, as like trained improvisers, say, are you an improviser? We go like, oh, yes. Are we doing what form? You know, like short form, long form? Are we finding a suggestion? Are we starting with a location?
Like, yeah, that's why always in the waiting room, I would try to pre-plan every joke I was going to make for when they told me to improvise. So I had those like in my back pocket. And then after the audition, I would put them all in a note on my phone in case I got a call back. So I
smart, the same
fake improv. I am so calculated and lame.
That's brilliant.
On my way to the callback, I review everything we did originally, and then I make up a few new fake improvs.
I love it. Guys, we have to back up. The story is so funny with Sarah Grace and I. So we were trying to get together as much as we love like rescheduling, adjusting. So we picked a series to do. And then out of the goodness of our hearts, we both rushed to do it. But then because our messages, we didn't get in touch with each other. I think, Sarah, you started to watch it. And then I watched the whole thing because I was like, if I'm not prepared, that's really going to suck. And then we decided after I watched the whole series It was horrible.
You watched? Wait, can
I watched the whole thing. Wait, what was it called again? I kind of blocked it out.
The Way Down.
The Way Down.
Well, so this is shocking to me because you guys, The Way Down is on like HBO Max, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's a 3-part doc series about a church in my hometown, yes. Franklin, Tennessee.
Wow.
That was just like, it's so funny because everyone's like, oh my God, this takes place in Franklin. Like, you must know it. But we had so many churches in my town that like, true. I was truly like, this one's not even on my radar. But I guess it was like really famous for being psychotic. And people were like, you're going to know people in it. It's insane.
Did you see anyone you knew or anything?
Somebody who like was like adjacent friends with my sister says something in the second episode. But like, I didn't get that far, cool. So I never saw her.
No, don't. You shouldn't. Yeah. So yeah, my brother lived in Tennessee for a while. He was playing music. One of my best friends from high school was in Tennessee. And it is true. Like when I go visit, there are more churches than anything. More churches than Starbucks, bodegas, like, it makes no sense.
Not even one bodega.
To me, as a New Yorker. Not one bodega. Where's all your chip beef? Nothing. And churches are just a part of life and a part of culture. Like you have your full life and church is involved in it.
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's not even religious to some extent.
It's like communal.
Yeah. It really is just like, that's the like meetup point, and like it was typical in high school to just know that like if you didn't go to the same church as your high school friends, you wouldn't like see them again Wednesday night
for and they'd probably burn in hell.
Yeah,
they don't go to your church.
I would be like, wait, why can't I just like, if Elisa's my best friend, like can I just go to church with Elisa's family? And it was like, no, because they go to the big like Methodist church and it's slightly different than.
What did you do?
We were non-denominational, which is funny because it like identifies based on being like, we're no denominations, but then it's like, what are you?
Yeah, but you are a thing. Yeah. And well, I'm Unitarian too. So we went to Unitarian church, which is also that.
Well, Unitarian is better, I think. Not to be qualitative.
No, but it is, it does have like enough key like symbols to say like, okay, I know this club, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure. But Unitarian is a little bit more like, we accept actually all faiths, not just like Christian.
Yeah, we accept every single thing. And a lot of the ministers are, you know, people are gay.
Yeah.
I love it. We went there because my dad's side was Jewish. My mom's side was Catholic. So that was where we mixed in.
I love that.
Thank you. I think that I would love a non-denominational one in Tennessee, though. It feels like that's like the best. So you have the social club.
I mean, that was the best you could do because, we didn't have Unitarian or, you know, anything else. Definitely no like Eastern practices happening or anything like that.
No. That's amazing.
But I definitely feel what your brother's saying about like meeting people too. Because I mean, it was even just like, I remember I left Tennessee and went to college, you know, in Chicago. And it still was kind of important to me, not even like when I would date someone or have a crush on someone, like, how do they believe? Like, how do they practice their faith? I didn't really care about that. I was just sort of like, what's their like church background? And like, do we speak the same language about like, the worship should be a band, not a choir.
Yes. Is there a drummer with like the drummer shield, you know, that is like really letting it go and singing hard? I love that. I am like so susceptible to joining any sort of religious group. Like you give me 5 minutes and I'll join it. I'll sign my life up to you. And you know, if you're in that world, it works because it's reinforcing their own world. Like if your parents agree with it, if you agree with that, like you can do this sort of like intense cultural, like repetitive worshiping and stuff. It's fulfilling.
But definitely like in that setting, I mean, when you're a kid, you're impressionable, you're emotional, you like the drama of it. We can't get too into it because at the end of the day, this is not even what we're talking
So I watched it and then at the end, okay, I will say though, do you know that everyone's dead? They all died.
Yeah, I know that she, what's her name? Shanlin. I know she died.
I can't even remember.
In a plane crash.
She died and the main guy died. And so you're following the whole documentary and you're crying because this mother who was her new husband's first girlfriend is like trying to get custody and there's a farmer who they're trying to steal his farm, all these upsetting things. And then they're all dead. It's like,
do they say that at the jump?
Well, they show the plane crash in the beginning, but you don't know who crashed. I guess you could Google it. But they do this whole thing, and I'm so worried. I'm like so stressed out about this mother and getting her child from custody. And then they're all dead. I'm like, well, there we go.
Oh my gosh.
I guess death saves.
Well, here's another segue. You know when yeah. you couldn't Google it in 1999?
99!
When Never Been Kissed is that?
Never Been. So guys, we are doing the movie Never Been Kissed. Well, also, I saw on your Instagram, a lot of things were happening in 1999. A lot of romance movies.
I was absolutely shook because yes. I was like, I remembered Never Been Kissed was like really like one of my absolute favorites when I yeah. saw it. Like. Yeah. I was yeah. absolutely, I thought it was the funniest movie I had ever seen. I thought Drew Barrymore was an iconic leading lady who could do it all. And I actually thought that the Michael Martin character, Mr. Coulson, was like the sexiest person I'd ever seen.
I mean, he's incredibly good. Like, I did think that. I thought he was pretty sexy. Now he's a little scrawny, but he's very, very sexy at the time.
That's why I looked up the year of the movie, because I was like, I have to remember like how old I was when I saw this, because I was like, I know that it was one of my first experiences of like watching a movie and like my body feeling funny.
Yeah, I love it.
Okay, I was born in 96, so I think yeah. in 99.
I was 15.
Okay, so I was like 13, depending yeah. on what month it came out, which there's absolutely yes. no way.
No way. I know it. I will not like to look at that up. But yeah, I was like 14, 15. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it was like, what grade are you in? Like
ninth grade was what it said for me.
Okay. So you just started high school and mm-hmm. I was like in weird middle school. Mm-hmm. And definitely the like next time I watched the movie, like out of the theaters when we got like the VHS or the DVD.
Yeah.
I definitely like tried to make myself look nice to watch it. Because he was in the movie.
Oh, I love it. So I love it.
Stuff was burning for me.
You know, things were happening. But that's so funny, too, because I remember she falls so much in the movie. And I was like, that's comedy gold. Like, when I was watching as a child, I was like, wow, all I have to do is fall. And then I'm the funniest lady in the world.
Oh, my gosh. She does fall a lot.
She falls so much. And that was the time. It was also, like, during Charlie's Angels where Cameron Diaz would dance and then fall down. Like, it was, like, women falling. It was such a highlight. She's all yeah. that. She falls down the stairs.
Oh, my God. That's like, right.
Yeah. 10 Things I Hate About You. She falls off a table after she dances. Like, oh, everyone's falling.
You're right.
And that was what we determined what funny was.
My God,
a woman not in control of her body.
So Julia Stiles actually also hit her head on a lighting fixture when she
yes. fell. Yes.
Oh my God. So, and all those movies like were in 1999. So it was really the year of the woman
the concussion. Yeah. But I was like, wow, I can't wait to be a comedian and hurt myself just as badly. Like yeah. I was thrilled. I was like, this is my journey.
Yeah.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
All
Are you ready to shop? Rakuten's Big Give Week is back. Get 15% back at hundreds of stores, and it's all happening this week, May 6th to May 13th. It's the perfect time to shop for everything on your list for spring and summer, like clothing, outdoor gear, and travel. I know I'm using this week to stock up on some warmer weather essentials at Ray-Ban and Ulta, and I love that Rakuten even helps me save on travel at sites like hotels.com. Rakuten really is the best way to shop, and you can save even more by stacking cash back on top of deals. Plus, during Big Give Week, that cash back is bigger than ever. With Rakuten, membership is free, and when you sign up and shop today, you get an extra 10% cash back boost. That's an extra 10% cash back on top of the 15% cash back. You won't see higher cash back rates than these. Go to Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app. R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Shoppers get it.
Now, what did you think about watching it once again? We both watched it together recently. Yeah. What did you think?
Well, I was definitely trying to think about it in terms of like this podcast theme. So I was like,
thank you.
You're welcome. You're absolutely welcome. So I was trying to think about first, like, just like the setup of the larger like scam that she's yes. like an undercover reporter posing as a 17-year-old, as a 25-year-old.
Yes.
I gotta say, Caitlin, I didn't concentrate on that for too long because I do not think the people who made the movie invested in setting up a believable scam.
No. She does a horrible job.
No one's helping her from the newspaper. There's no undercover training.
No. Okay, so it's so bad. Okay, so guys, so Drew Barrymore starts as this woman who, if you haven't seen it, I don't know if you need to see it. She just like starts as this woman who looks like she's lives in a cult. Like her outfit is like she lives in a cult and she just came out of a bunker. Like she looks so weird and old and like she's very antisocial. And she's like snorting and like can't even look people in the eye. Like she's developed zero social skills.
Yeah.
And it does seem like she might have a disorder. Like you'd be like, oh, if you said like she has Asperger's, I'd be like, great. That makes sense. You know, then they say Gary, everyone's in this movie. Yeah. Gary Marshall is the boss. And he's like, high school's where it's all at. And so he tells her to dress up and pretend she's going to high school. Now he picks her for some reason. Don't know why. I think she's technically the youngest, but she doesn't look the youngest. She looks like she's 60 years old.
Yeah.
And he tells her to go undercover in high school and get the top story. And that should be like where the scam is, that she's lying, that she's hiding.
And I feel like I need to preface quickly that like I did not like study journalism. I didn't go to journalism school famously. I never worked at like a newspaper or magazine.
Famously.
Yeah, yeah. So I actually don't know how investigative journalism works, but I am pretty sure that you don't just say, we're going to send you undercover to an environment where there's no story happening.
Nothing.
See if you can find one.
It's very shady journalism. It's very unethical. And it's very like, there's something about going undercover in the FBI. Like if there's a thing you have to, a heist, or there's going undercover in like a difficult place. But yeah, this was just, but it was also so 1999 where it was like, hey, just mess it up and move around. Like the ethics were very shady in all the movies we've watched in that time. And the boss too is, first of all, says in the first scene, like, you're no good. You've never done anything undercover. You've never done anything investigative. Mm-hmm. You're a copy editor.
You're a copy then, editor.
Yeah. Just you're checking my grammar. And she's checking everyone's grammar all day long.
Yeah.
The most annoying. And then once she goes in, he's like, my life depends on you. Our careers depend on you. You have to be the best spy in the world, which is so crazy.
It's so funny. I mean, crazy. I really just feel like they didn't spend any time with exposition or creating stakes, but they did just say like, just give it stakes.
Just give it stakes. Well, she walks in that first day. She transforms herself and you think she'd look young, but she looks like a crack.
She looks older. she actually looks older.
She looks so bad. Her senior citizen haircut got even more senior. It looks like how my bubby would have like her bangs up really high. And it was like that bleach blonde that's kind of white, but looks gray.
And she's wearing like white lipstick.
She wore white lipstick. She looks like a crackhead. And she was wearing a boa. She looked like she didn't know how to function in life, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it just was like, So, okay, on the level of the Chicago Sun-Times and the role of her news office in this movie, this scam,
not
thin,
me.
Very thin.
Very thin. And then as she's there, it suddenly she loses her desire to discover anything. And it's just personally about Drew Barrymore's character fitting in. That's it.
Yeah.
And it's, she's not even interviewing people, really.
No.
She's just like, I hope they like me.
Yeah. Cause, and then it's like a weird moment of like her coworkers being like, okay, we sent you in there. We have no idea what the story is, but we know it's with the popular kids. We know it's not with the, we have no idea what it is. We have no idea what this piece is, but you need to be friends with the popular kids. So of course she has to confront all the demons from her real time in high school when she was not a popular kid.
And she has flashbacks from being in high school and she looks younger in the flashbacks.
Which is like incredible. Crazy. How did they do it?
You think that they wanted her to look younger in the flashbacks, so they made her actually look so much older and so ridiculous in the present. Like, honestly, she looks like a 50-year-old woman. She looks younger now than she did then.
Yeah, it's really true.
She does multiple makeovers. Then she starts to look like 1950s Betty Boop style. Like, it is so bad.
Yes.
It is so bad. And everyone in that high school is a senior citizen almost. And then her brother is David Arquette, who is a pedophile.
And David Arquette rolls in as a 23-year-old to sort of help her. And also, just this is for the viewers. He wants to get on the baseball team so he can have his second shot at becoming a professional athlete. Now, David Arquette makes himself a fake ID. He used the materials at his Tiki Post job
post to office.
Make a fake ID. Now, I thought there was real, like, discrepancy where the movie tried to, I think at the beginning, frame that, like, high school has a lot of security in the 90s because she had to go through a metal detector and they took away her nail file. But then David Arquette rolls in with this fake ID and just signs up.
Yeah, and he does look like he's about to murder someone. Like, he just, he looks like so greasy, like he forgot even like his own name. And he looks like he's fathered multiple high school children. Like, he does look like there's, and they're arguing and it looks like they're having like a couple spat in it. It doesn't look like they're high school kids in any way.
I mean, I have to say, like, everyone looking so old helped me because you actually like forget like how disturbing everything is. If they actually look young, everything, especially with the teacher dynamic, becomes so disturbing. And I do want to get into that. But just on the David Arquette subject really quick, though.
Please.
I remember that when he comes to the school, he is able to, like, make her popular.
Yes.
By, like, telling little lies about her that make her seem cool. I did forget that truly disgusting moment where he's talking to the baseball other baseball players, and he sort of insinuates that he's had sex with her.
Lots of it. They used to go out together and sometimes they still fuck. He said that about his own sister.
I was truly like, wait.
Yeah.
Wait.
Like, that isn't a scam. That's just creepy. That's like not even, that helps no one.
Oh my God. If you really like pause the movie and you're like, imagine like your, this is your brother.
Never. I'm going to throw up.
I was like, throw up. Oh my God.
It's so, and he really was like selling it like, oh yeah. And it's like, you suck. Like, you suck.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. The part where he was sort of like, yeah, she's like really good. It's really good friendship. And they're like, really good, really good. And he's like, it's like really good. I was like,
ew.
And for me as a 13-year-old, I was totally just like, oh my God. Amazing.
That's so nice of him. I was like, he's really helping her. I wish someone would say how great I am at sex in my high school.
No. Can I get him to come to mine?
Can I get someone to hype me up after he eats a tub of coleslaw and high fives everyone? Like, that's what I need. It did seem like it was a good solution at the time. But he is hooking up with a 16-year-old.
Oh, that too.
Who is a virgin and a gymnast. And it's just like, it is so creepy too, because you're looking at this from, I don't ever forget that he's not old. Like, he looks old the whole time.
He looks really old.
Not, like, Drew Barrymore's, like, brain capacity kind of fluctuates. But, like, with him, you're like, you're an old, creepy man. And he's like, yeah, gymnast. And he's creepy the whole time.
I feel like they tried to do, like, a two-second, like, nod to the fact that, like he doesn't want her to put her legs up over her head. And it's like, whoa, you shouldn't do that or something like that.
Because I've already seen it in the car.
Exactly. But I'm like, you're at the prom with her without your pants on.
You're fucking this child. Oh, yeah. The prom was best couples in history. And Drew Barrymore shows up in like an Edwardian dress because, you know what? She just filmed Ever After the year before. So I was like, was that just in her closet?
Was she like, we just wrapped Ever After. I have a gorgeous corset. Let me throw myself in this. I like how I look in these old timey clothing. You know, yeah. Here we go. She had so many costume changes. So, okay. And then, oh, this is so insane. Also, while all this is happening, she's wearing like a secret camera.
Yeah.
So that not only is she doing all this unethical, and no one's parents signed off on forms to be filmed, but she has her entire office are watching tapes of her every day in high school. And it becomes like a movie to all of them. And people are falling in love. And like all these adults, quote unquote, are like popping popcorn and watching her like struggle through high school. And there's a guy in a van mm-hmm. who has been sitting outside the school the whole time. That's her like secret friend. But if you're in a high school and someone has had a van for months sitting in the front with like dark windows and one man coming in and out with one child over and over again, you should be calling the police. That high school sucks. No one knocked on the door. No one asked, what's happening in here?
Also, what about when she was friends with the geeks and they're supposed to be looking after her and taking care of her and they don't notice she's getting in and out of a van with a man?
Come on, geeks. You were the smartest people there. You were a double helix as a costume. And the thing, too, is that, like, she messes one day. She messes up and she, like, misses her friend's meetup and she doesn't call her or anything. Like, she's a real bitch to her geek friend, which everyone is in every movie. But it's only, like, one mess up. But Lily Sobieski, like, murders her in her mind. She's like, you're dead to me forever. you stood me up one day. Oh. I was like, this was in 99, like when you just got phones. Like people stood each other up all the time accidentally. They were just like, oh, I went to the wrong place. Like there's a lot of forgiveness in high school, but not for Lily Sobieski.
Oh, she took that very personally.
She was actually 16 years old in that movie. She was the only one who was actually of age. And then Jessica Alba was 18. They were the only ones.
I totally get that. And actually, while we're talking about the supporting cast.
Let's go.
What on earth is going on with the casting choice of Guy?
Her love interest.
Drew Barrymore is, okay, this is also sketchy, but so Drew Barrymore, when she's undercover in the high school folks, mm-hmm. there's like the popular hot guy amongst the high schoolers who reminds her of the popular hot guy from when she was in high school. This person should have been cast by like a hot teen who, mm-hmm. like, I'm trying to think like who would
be. Like a Zac Efron, like when Zac Efron, like Zac Efron had that like cute sexiness when he was underage, which is gross to say, but he kind of had that like wink in his eye. This guy looked like a gay poet, and that's okay. Like he really was very such homosexual vibes in the best way. Like he and James Franco kept giggling and touching each other because James Franco was his best friend. Anytime they had a scene, they'd point to each other and they'd both be like, woo. I was like, great. Are we going to find out he's gay this whole time? And that he was using her as like a front or something. It was like his own scam.
Like, oh, you know, I definitely didn't consider that because growing up in Tennessee,
in 99,
I didn't know about gay people yet. So I didn't think that guy was gay.
No, but now as an adult, which is great. Let's be honest and truthful in this movie about lying, you know?
He really sort of gave me a weird feeling too. Like the scene where he asked her rapist from in the bedroom and he just kind of sits on the bed with her and is like, so you've probably already heard, I'm going to ask you the prom. There's just something about doing it in person. And then she's like so giddy.
Yeah.
She's kind of has a crush on the 17-year-old and the teacher.
She does. She's horny like crazy. And in the beginning, she tells Molly Shannon. Molly Shannon is, oh wait, we have to go over all of the characters, all of the mega stars. I had to write them down because I was losing my mind. Okay.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. Molly Shannon, John C. Reilly, David Arquette, Jessica Alba, Lily Sobieski, Octavia Spencer, the mom from Santa Claus, plays her Spanish teacher. I don't know her name. But I was like, that's the mom. She's the one who's so mad at Tim Allen. The girl Marissa from Hairspray, Gary Marshall, Jeremy Jordan, who's like the hot guy who's not looking so good these days. And Michael Vartan is the hot teacher, who is really hot. And what turns him on about Drew Barrymore when they first meet is that she listens to what he says.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She repeats something he said. And he goes like, wow, you listened? And it's like, whoa, you're like sucks. Like you're a teacher. No one listens to you. And you're turned on by this like uncomfortably, even if she is 17, she's behaving dumber than most 17. So she does seem that something's off.
Yeah.
And that gets him going,
And, you know, she's smart and she's good at his class, which makes him feel like a good teacher. And I think that also turns him on.
It does. And they go to a party where the students and teachers are mingling. They all look 45 years old. Everyone looks the same age. I couldn't remember who was from her office and who was from school. I was like, oh, wait, that guy's not a child. He's her weird assistant who's like had weird lines.
Right.
It's ad-libbed. And then he introduces her to his girlfriend who's from New York City and wants to get serious. And he says, like, she just thinks I need to grow up. And it's like, yeah, dick, you should not be trying to fuck 17-year-olds in high school.
I mean,
maybe you should grow up and go to New York City.
I think he should definitely go to New York City with his of-age girlfriend. There's not even a question. There's not even a question.
But this movie makes you go, yeah, dump her, live in this, like, weird, hidden, confusing Chicago. Like, they make Chicago like it's a small town.
And no,
I think it's as small.
So
as
weird about
they're
that.
Trying to make it.
I mean, it is famously the second biggest city.
Yeah, it's actually a huge guys. Oh God. But I remember like the crux during this like party where the teachers and kids were hanging out. They have like a spark happen, and he says like, she just wants me to, I guess I need to grow up. And it's like, whoa, what a bitch.
Yeah.
And like, what a damper. And that's really his struggle in life, is that he has to be with someone of his own age. Like, that's his cross to bear.
Well, Caitlin, I mean, we have to dig in here because, like, I was shook watching it that none of this ever came into my mind. As a 13-year-old, I even feel like I watched it again, like in college, like to show people, like, you didn't see Never Been Kissed. It's so fun. Like, I mean, I never clocked any of this creepiness.
I know.
Like, I feel like actually I got scammed because I just totally, like, his line at the beginning where he's like, are you sure you're 17? I think in my head, I just went like, okay. He always suspected that she was older, so it's okay.
Oh.
But there's nothing, you know.
There's nothing to tell him.
No, she says, I'm not. I'm a student. Why wouldn't she be a student? I mean, it's not like he thinks it's an undercover agent. Otherwise, he would have, like, tried to figure that out more. Like,
or it could have been so much more interesting if he did figure it out and was like, okay, like, I'll play. Like, what is this? And then she gets him in and they're like in it cahoots together. And that could be even goofy to be like, no, we're not creepy pedophiles. We're actually in love. Like, but I don't know what the end game is. It's like creepy pedophile if you do or if you don't.
Caitlin, I have to remind you of the moment on the Ferris wheel.
Okay. Oh God.
There's a moment on the Ferris wheel.
Tell us all.
Drew Barrymore's alone on the Ferris wheel. Famously, you can't ride a Ferris wheel alone.
Yeah, God forbid.
You have to have two people in it or the machine can't work.
Falls off.
Falls off the rails.
Rolls down the hill. Hey, everyone is mass murdered. That's famously first.
So famously, that classic problem arises. Michael Fartan is alone at the fair, straight up chilling.
No, he's shooting something with guns, and then hears her that she's far away. But he has this radar, like bing bing bing. Drew Barrymore is alone for a second, and they need a second, so he runs to the Ferris wheel.
Yeah.
He's not even standing in line for the Ferris wheel. He's in another part of the park, but he gets there in time.
not chaperoning this school activity. Not chaperoning, actually just playing.
No, playing himself. Because he doesn't want to grow up, Sarah Grace.
Which we have established.
He doesn't want to grow up. It's too hard.
Okay, so let's talk about the moment in the Ferris wheel.
Okay, so he gets in the Ferris wheel.
He gets in the car.
In the nick of time.
They, of course, talk about his personal life again. The girlfriend and the move to New York comes up again.
Again.
We just do that with our teachers. We talk about their dating lives. And then he says, there's a pause, and he goes, when you're my age, guys are going to be lined up around the block for you. And she says, you have to say that because you're my teacher.
Teacher.
And he says, actually, I shouldn't say that because I'm your teacher. And I was just like, I mean, my jaw was fully on the floor. I don't call the cops, but I did call the cops.
Yeah, she did.
I was like, this is not okay.
No. And she needs to be in a hospital or followed by somebody if you think she is of age and behaving this way. Like, there's her mental ability. She needs to be medicated. It's not charming, even if he, let's say he did think she was older, but was like, okay, you're in denial and you think you're 17. She needs to go to a clinic. Like, she needs to be signed up and have someone monitor her if she's going through this psychosis of believing she's 17. Like,
yes.
He's scamming himself, but it's also like, okay, it's so convenient for him, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I hope you were lucky enough to have a teacher who was handsome who you had a crush on. I definitely had a few myself.
I had it was so funny. One teacher everyone had a crush on because he just talked to the students like a regular person. And I was like, huh, he's not attractive at all, but I can make myself have a crush with him if he liked me. Even then I was kind of settling. But I didn't really, on Boy Meets World, there was that really hot teacher. Yeah. And I just wish he worked at my school, but no.
I mean, not
for me.
My teachers were not as hot as this either, but I did have crushes on them just because, you know, you have crush on almost anyone.
Of course.
But could you imagine though, Kaylin, if one of them had said to you who you had a crush on, like after a class, you go to talk to them about something and they say, when you're my age, guys are going to be lined up around the block for you. I would have flipped. I would have been so giddy and excited, and they would have been like, a pervert.
A creepy. Well, it's so funny. So I grew up in a very loving, goofy Jewish family. So there were many old senior citizen men who were like, you're the most beautiful girl. You're going to hit them off with a stick when you're old. So I had a lot of 80-year-old men telling me wait till you get your chance when you fall in love. So I think I had heard that line by a grandmother or grandfather with a lazy eye. So I don't think I would have known it was a bad thing.
I definitely wouldn't have, but I would have, I mean, with that intimacy though, I would have been like, oh my God, okay, maybe he likes me.
Yeah. I also would have been like, I have to stand outside this classroom for the rest of my life. Like, I was very much like, I think I still am like this in proximity to something. Like, if I liked something, I would just probably be around that classroom or stand by those lockers. Like, I would become weird. So, I mean, I am weird, but so weird.
Yeah. And I think she plays that pretty well. I mean, she seems she seems pretty giddy and nervous about him and about Guy, the other guy.
Yeah.
Too. She must have been very confused in her own head.
She's going to need a lot of therapy. She succumbs to the world. She abandons her geeky friends. She joins the popular girls, thanks to her brother saying that they boned. And she's fully involved with these girls. She's hanging out. And at no point does she look age appropriate. At no point.
I feel I want to stay on Michael Vartan's psyche for a second so I can ask you if you understood this moment at the prom. I mean, everything about him at the prom confused me a lot on this rewatch.
And the prom theme was Millennium, and some other piece of shit school stole Millennium, and they screamed like there was a stabber on the loose. They were like, someone took our prom theme.
I know.
And so Drew Barrymore came up with the couples. It would have been so much better if she was a romance novelist and she was writing, she needed to find material for a YA novel. Anything.
That's actually way better.
Yeah, because she's not invested in being undercover. She's doing it because one of her bosses made her, and the other boss says, if we don't get this, we're both going to get fired. And she's doing it because Molly Shannon, in the beginning, who's her coworker, says she fucks everyone and wouldn't it be so fun? And you get to be 17 again. I remember hearing that. It was so exciting.
Yeah.
And Molly Shannon really sells that this is a good idea. I was like, Molly Shannon loves this idea. I'm in. As a kid, I was like, I trust her. I trust her with my life.
Oh, yeah.
She also was an unstable sexaholic.
Right. But for me, I was also like, that seems really cool. And she seems like she's having fun. And I was
she's a good friend.
I think partially her character made me think, I bet sex is really fun. And when I get old, I'm going to try to have it with everybody like that.
She showed me that there's nothing attached when you have sex.
Yeah.
Especially with Jimmy from Op-Ed or whoever she boned. So Drew Barrymore, there's no stakes. It would have been so much better if she had had stakes in this and it was in any way mattered to her to fit in and to be undercover. But she just kind of even when she's hanging out with them, she's just kind of flung in there.
Yeah.
And even these stories that a certain place, there's, you know what I would have loved? So they go by this place called, I don't know, the Downs or something.
The Court.
The Court, yeah. And it's where everybody drinks and is crazy. And the next day, their sister newspaper or the competing newspaper writes a story about it. And her boss is like, Drew, why didn't you write about the court, about the underage drinking? I was thinking that like maybe Jessica Alba's character, like a student would be writing for that newspaper.
Oh, wait. That's such a miss on their part because yes. when she blows her cover at the prom, that gets mm-hmm. scooped by the other paper as well.
Yes.
So definitely they should have established it was a mole. Maybe Michael Varchnet or Jessica Alba, yeah.
Yeah, or the gay, the non-gay gay guy who was her love interest. Maybe that's why he was acting like he liked her because it was for his own gain or something. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, that was a miss, actually.
That was a miss. But I will say, the win was when she got hit in the face with that egg. I cried, too.
Oh, I mean, that's tough.
Was so upsetting. She did those sad emotions so well.
The flashbacks to her in high school
were heartbreaking.
Are tough. They're tough yeah. to watch. Like, she's really, really good. And actually, yes. like, just so much more believable in those moments, her like dorky way, than the weird thing she's doing. As she gets older and works for this newspaper, you're like, how did she get this job at a newspaper? How does she have her own apartment? She's like acting so weird.
Oh, she cross stitches all of her own pillows and like talks to them and has turtles. This woman is deranged.
Yeah. But as a 17-year-old, you're like...
Perfect, iconic.
She's a baby. Of course she thought she could write this poem that would make him like her. Oh my God, I so would have thought that. I would not have read it in front of him because that would have made me too scared. And like, the poem is for him and not everyone else.
You're right. Well, you're a performer and you know who your audience is. Circus. That's where you shine.
And I think, honestly, I've always known that. I think I've always...
You've always known your audience. No matter how old
always known my audience. But I do think I would have written a poem if I felt like I was very good at poetry. And just been like, it will help us tremendously. This is how I'll let
Thank you guys so much for listening.
Yeah.
All of your support. Yeah. So happy they did in 10 Things I Hate About You. And I was like, wow, if I had the chance, if Heath Ledger was around me, I'd say a poem. I'd pray to him. I'd say whatever it takes.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.